It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, and away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And good to have you all along. Good to see my friend, Captain Mike Ward.
Good to be seen, Sean.
Yeah, it's good to everybody be seen here on this opening day of teal season. So right now, there's teal hunting going on, and for the South Zone, dove season.
Yeah.
So birds, blue and gray, they used to call it the blue and gray day, right?
Yeah. And then you had opening weekend of dove season last
North
weekend.
Zone, yeah.
North Zone.
Right.
Yeah, and about a month away, we're going to have bow season starting.
Yeah.
A lot of things happening.
Perfect time of year, and a lot going on out there. And we got a lot to talk about on today's show. Of course, we can talk about several subjects with our guest this hour, because we can talk about some other fishing to be done out there, even though snapper's done. But there's other fish to be caught in the Gulf. Fall fishing in the Bay and the Delta is starting to step up.
Yep.
Got to go out this week. Got on some white trout out of the Dog River area. Did that. Had a little afternoon trip there, so that was picking up and made me think about, if it keeps like this, then October should be good.
You got Knock to on go wood. Fishing?
I got to go fishing for an hour and a half, Mike.
Man.
Yeah, pretty proud of me. And I got, I've got some discing done. Yeah.
Yeah,
discing done, stands limbed, all kind of good stuff happening out there.
You're doing good.
And be careful on the bush hog right now. I got biddies everywhere. I wasn't seeing any fawns, and my daughter said, I saw two fawns coming in on the driveway. I say, yeah, you didn't see two fawns. This last week, it's been everywhere. Everywhere.
Yeah, you got to be careful if you're bush hogging big, tall fields.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah. Be aware, because they're out there. And as we talk about all these things, we'll bring our friend Jay Graddick on from Skinner's Wild Game Processing to talk about that and a whole lot more. Hey, Jay.
Hey, guys. Y'all doing well, I understand.
I think so.
Yeah, we're doing good, man.
It's not too early to start talking about deer hunting for sure, but I do want to get a little recap on your fishing year. How'd you do in the Gulf?
Well, I got to go out about, I don't know, five trips spread out, over the summer, and we had good trips every trip. As the season went on, it got a little more difficult to get a good quality box of fish, but we had a good time.
We're talking deer, and we're talking a lot about the woods right on today's show, but your lament, so this is a off the record conversation that I'll just bring onto the show, but you and Mike were talking about it. I experienced the same thing too. Had trouble finding a good snapper this year. I mean, even for me, and I'm the guy that is way behind y'all. I got the smaller boat, I got the 25-foot boat, so for me to push out when I go way out, it's 40 miles, but to me, going out way out 40 miles and still having trouble, not having to measure, every dang fish that came in the boat. What was your experience on snapper?
Well, at the end of last year, Sean, I had the same thing as this year. In the beginning of the season, there was no problem. Last year, there was a couple of girls that came by the marina down there on Morgan, and they measured and weighed my catch, and they did it twice, and I asked them, I said, well, how'd I stack up with the boys over in Orange Beach? And they both told me, they said, you had the highest aggregate average weight snapper.
Wow.
For your catch.
And so, what was that, Jay?
It was like 21 something.
Oh, those are monsters.
Yeah, those are huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what happened was, the last time I went fishing, it was about a month in there, and I mentioned this to you, Mike. I got about five or six places that are, 45, 50 miles out there that produce really, really good fish. There wasn't a fish on none of them. I had a hard time catching fish.
Jay, and that's the same thing happened to me, too.
Same thing.
So, I mean, I like to point that out, having you on and Mike on at the same time, two guys that, got the spots and got the experience out there, that it has gotten tougher. And listen, there are places you can go, even in close and go with lighter fluorocarbon and do some live baits and still catch some fish. But I think coming off all those years when the feds were running things and had it shut down so much. Then when it opened back up, things were kind of easier than normal for a lot of people, even people close like me. They're fishing 20 miles out.
Right.
That those things have been changing over the years, and it's not what it used to be.
It's not.
And even the charter captains, you know, right. even Kirk Tillman, even though he shows all these big fish on there and he catches, he's as good as anybody I know in the Gulf catching snapper. But he'll tell you that it's gotten tougher for him to catch them. He used to go to one or two spots and limit out with his clients and come on back in. Now he's got to hit 6 or 8 or 10 or so or more sometimes to get his limit and catch quality fish. Yep. So things are a little tougher than what it used to be, I know.
Yeah, I know the last trip that I went on this year, Mike, went straight to a real quality place, caught like two big fish, went to another one, caught one or two, and then I bet you I went to 20 places before we limited out. I had 6 people on the boat before we limited out on what I would consider a fish, worth keeping.
Right.
And it was tough. I burnt a ton. I went 70 miles and round trip, it was tough.
Yeah, well, that's what's been happening to most of the people that I have talked to that fish out, 30 to 50 miles or so offshore from Dauphin Island.
Right.
They're experiencing pretty much the same thing. Yeah. And I did see a commercial boat on one of my spots the other day when I was coming in from fishing. And looked over there, and I said, well, now I know why that spot's not any good anymore, because there was a commercial boat on it. And I don't know what he would have been catching, because I had hit it that morning, and it was a place that would just wear them out, catch big fish, 15, 20-pounders. And I'd gone by that spot that morning, and I don't think we caught a fish, if I remember right. But there he was sitting on it when I came by. Now, there were some small fish, maybe barely keepers or even smaller than keepers, but I don't know what he was catching on there. It couldn't have been nothing big. So that could be one problem is some of the commercial guys. This is a commercial boat. It wasn't a commercial guy in a boat like me and you have, a 30-something foot outboard.
Plus,
it was a 40-something foot real commercial boat.
Right.
Yeah, plus you got to say, we've talked about this too, just the way technology's changed. Things people say, hey, is this your private number? I say, no, it's not public.
That's right. Private, you are 100%
right. I say, it's
right.
Not published. They say, is this a private number? I said, well, it's not published. It doesn't mean it's private, y'all.
That's right.
That's
everybody's
reality.
Got all this new electronics and all these sonars and stuff that, you can find a lot of places out there if you got a good sonar. On your boat. So things have changed a lot. It's easier for people to find your spots than it used to be. But they can only keep 2 per person.
Right.
Unless they got 20 people on the boat, they're not really going to hurt your spot.
Yeah, no, they're not. But what I see in the closer stuff than y'all fish is kind of shift change. There's places that, once again, nothing's private. It's just some stuff's not published.
That's right.
That we're fishing. And I'm coming in there, and as I'm leaving, there's another boat coming right in there. They didn't triangulate me. They have the number 2 somehow. Yeah, they're coming in, and then there's another 2 boats that probably hit it later on in the day. And, if you're way out, that may not happen. But when you're in
– As much.
Yeah, but when you're 90 feet of water, 100, 90 to 110, that kind of range, right? There's a lot of people out there, a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll
be honest with you. One of my best places that I've ever had was in 150-something feet. It's between 150 and 160. And usually when I pull up there and start fishing, it'll be solid fish from the bottom to about 60 feet under my boat. And at the end of the year this year, they weren't there. The end of last year, they weren't there. The beginning of the year, they were there both years. But I don't know what happened to them. I don't know if somebody's wearing it out. Or if they move, or just what's going on. But I'm talking about not pick up a single fish on my bottom machine.
That's strange, isn't it? And at the beginning of the year, last year and this year, there was plenty of fish on it, and good fish.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that almost seems like they moved, went somewhere, and then they came back is kind of what it seems like.
Yeah.
So yeah. That is
that
strange.
That water, you know, you would think they wouldn't get hammered quite as much, but and a quality fish, Mike, I'm talking about, I tell my people, say, look, no need to go on the bottom. Stop it at about 75 feet and hang on.
That's right. And when you've got a good spot and you're in 150 foot of water, that's really about all you need to go is 60, 80 foot, maybe 100 foot, and that's it. You don't go to the bottom for the big fish. The big fish are up off the bottom.
They up off the top.
Not only that, if you get a big fish on, you're more likely to get him up. He won't get you back into the wreck.
Right, right. Yep. But that's the way it's been, you ask. I mean, that's how it's been with me the last 2 years. You know, now last year I had to have that dang, my boat is a, I've got the reef permits and the pelagic. I can fish it like a charter boat. I got the charter boat permit.
Right.
And so last year I had to have that dang beacon on my boat that sent a signal to a satellite every 5 minutes when I was out there. And last year was the first year that these places that I had, if you'd swear them down, they got fished out. And I asked them when I called this year, of course, they struck that thing down in court, and boys out of Louisiana sued NOAA and won the case. And I asked the lady I was talking to, I said, is there any way that somebody can get that information that was recorded on where I was going and places I was sitting on? Is that accessible by the public? And she said only a certain, only a few people could actually access that data. But anyway, I don't want to be conspiracy, but it just makes you wonder. It just so happened that was a year that the places kind of died on me.
That is something to think about.
We'll pick it up on the other side of the break. Our guest, Jay Graddick from Skinner's Wild Game Processing, right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, our guest, Jay Graddick from Skinner's Wild Game Processing, and a lot to talk about. Looking forward, we did a little looking back at gulf fishing, but still, plenty of other fish to catch out there. People keep after it. I'm going to try. I'm going to try some October fishing, some November fishing. We'll see.
Well, I hope I get to, too. I'd like to ask Jay one more question about the beacon. You have a beacon on your boat because you're treated like a charter boat. So you go out and they can track and see where you're at every 5 minutes. They tracking you, right?
Correct.
Okay. And, the lady that you talked to said only certain people have that information that they can access. And, that could be one of your problems, be honest with you.
It could be. Every charter boat in the Gulf of Mexico had to have that year before last.
But they don't have to have it now.
Okay. No, they got struck down, and this season they didn't have to have it. But the damage being done last season, if that information got out, and a lot of people could be fishing a lot of places that they weren't fishing before. Who knows?
That's right. I mean, you just don't know what the government is doing with that information. That's a problem.
Yep.
All right. So shift gears here. To shift gears to deer, because obviously I'm not teal hunting this morning, and maybe I'll have a dove report by next week's show. I think I have 11 doves on my place now, Mike. So things are up for me.
When you get to 20, you let me know and we'll
come
them.
Shoot. I got invited. I get to go to Baldwin County tomorrow and shoot. So that's good.
Hopefully 20, I'll bring two cases of shells out there, and we'll have a big time. I'll kill two or three.
Okay, good. and hopefully between now and next week too, I'll get to go teal hunting and talk about it. But without having that, let's talk deer hunting and kind of where we sit in trips and here at home. Let's talk. We talked to Jay. We got to talk about Kansas. We've got to talk about the Midwest. What are you hearing out there? Well, have you spent any time out there? I got a nephew out there, and he's always talking about for bird numbers, like pheasant, quail, you know, drought versus non-drought and how it affects. What's the situation out there with water? And what do you see in the antler growth? What do you know?
Well, I haven't gotten a lot of information, to be honest with you. I've been busy over here, you know, in my real life trying to build a nuclear power plant. But I did get some reports that the deer populations in the area that Mike and I are hunting in that general area, they had a great crop of fawns this year. So every doe they see's got twins. And I've got some cell cam pictures from Mike. You sent me some. Of course, right. You know about those. And then I got just a couple stragglers that people had sent me of some good deer. I haven't seen anything that's going to knock you off your chair yet, but they're there. I mean, that part of the country just got some. There's some very, very big deer out there roaming around, and I look forward to it every year.
Yeah, I mean, I told you the other day, and Sean, I'm going out to Kansas tomorrow. And I got in a club out there and didn't get drawn this year. That just drives me crazy. Me or my grandson, either one got drawn for archery. But I'm going out there with some club members, and I'm just going to spend a week out there with them. We're going to put some more stands up and, you know, check cameras and, you know, just have a good time. I'd even fish a little bit while I'm out there. But, you know, just excited about going out there. Just like you said, I've seen those deer. I spent 4 weeks out there the last 2 years riding around. Me and you did some riding around and saw a 200 and something class, and I've seen several more 200 and something class out there. You know, I can't tell you how many riding around I've seen, 150, 60, 70, maybe 80s or whatever. I mean, they've got them, you know. That don't mean you're going to kill them, but there is a lot of big deer out there for sure.
Yeah, you can't kill them if they're not there, at least in Kansas. And some of the Midwest states, the deer are there. And it teaches you a lot about deer, I'll be honest with you, because of I no longer think of deer hunting as a small, you know, people fight over a tree stand location. And it's a much bigger picture than one stand location, you know. So it's taught me to look at deer movement on a much bigger scale, depending on what time of year it is, even in Alabama. You know, we have some deer that these cameras last year, early in the season, there was a deer killed that was a mile and a half from where one guy had a picture of it. A guy killed over on a place called Fark Hunting Club, which is Scotch Hunting Club, a mile and a half away a week later, early in the season, like the first weekend or two of the season. So that deer, whether he got bumped, moved, or whatever, he did travel that far.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I don't think it's small.
Yeah, it's true. But, I mean, it's the difference in hunting where you can. I mean, if here in Alabama, if you have the land, that's great, that kind of area. Out Kansas, you can get – but, you know, for a lot of folks, they got to deal with what happens on that 80 acres or that 110 or something like that, you know, being that they can't go range out and find them. It's got to happen right here on, you know, the back 40.
Exactly. You know, Kansas, I tell people that go out there, it's time spent in the tree, okay? It's the big deer you see. If you go out there in early November through really the month of November, the next deer you see might have been several miles away yesterday. So you can't get bent out of shape. Well, I don't have any good deer on camera. I don't have any big deer on camera. I hear that all the time. Don't worry about it. Go get in a tree. Think about travel corridors. Think about the wind direction. Get on the downwind side of thick stuff and hang out. And like I said, the next thing you see could be the biggest buck you ever seen in your life. Don't mean you're going to kill him, but at least you've got a chance to see him. And you know, it keeps you wanting to go back. It keeps that fire lit in you where, you know, man, I'm going to Kansas. At least I have a chance. Kill a big deer.
And you're 100% right, Jay. You told me this first time I went up there with you, is that there is not a bad tree in Kansas. you know, and you are right. I'm telling you, because those deer travel so much up there. It's so open in a lot of places. There's just not a bad place to be. They, just like you say, they might travel a mile or two tonight, you know, exactly. And be in a place exactly. that they hadn't never been in before.
There's a friend of mine. I'm not calling names. He lives in Mobile. There's a friend of mine who's an attorney. He went out there hunting with me a couple of years. We saw a buck cross the road, really nice buck, and he walked in the center of a section, but you could see the center of that section for the whole mile. And this time, paralleling in a truck, that deer walked through that section. It took 15 minutes.
Hey Jay, we're having a little trouble hearing you here. Can you raise that antenna on that CB up a little bit more? We could get there. You go. A lot better right there.
Yeah, you got to start back over. You got a friend here, Mobile's attorney, and what happened after that?
Okay, well, we saw a big deer across the road, and we paralleled, and that deer walked through the center of the section. We could see him. And he walked his whole section, probably took 15 minutes or so, as we paralleled there. And he crossed Highway 75, which is just south of the junction there where we stayed, Mike.
Right.
And that you know, just in 15, 20 minutes' time, that deer covered miles. He never stopped walking. He wasn't pushed. He was just traveling. And so that said a lot. In a day, those bucks, they cover a lot of
distance. Yep. Still having a little trouble hearing you here, but kind of getting an idea of that movement. All right, which, by the way, while we get a better cell, too, let me, you know, I mentioned last week, like every time I talk about cell cameras, because Jay mentioned it, you mentioned it, I get emails here at the station, you know, about it. What I'd said last week was just the change. Somebody said, you said there was a change to cutty back cameras. The change was that you can now have up to 24. Versus it used to be 16. So man, people ask me, you know, that Cuddy Link system I use, and I talk about the two I use, is Cuddy Link for like a network system and Spy Points for one-off. And we've had whole shows on this, but like if you had one big block piece of property, to me the Cuddy Link system or something that would be similar to that has a network of cameras that all come back to a mother camera is best. If you have a piece here, a piece over there, Spy Point individual cameras or better, you know.
Yes.
So, but yeah. So somebody asked me, you're talking about the change. Change was, you can now have a 23 drone camera. They're not on a drone. 23 other cameras, and then the mother camera being 24, where it used to be 16.
Yeah.
So that's the change. So yeah, somebody's asked me what that change was. That was.
They
the
just want you to buy more cameras.
Well, okay, but here's the thing. Actually,
yeah.
I was getting ready to buy a whole other system.
Right.
Another mother camera. Another system, but this for me, kind of nick of time, I can add more cameras to the network I already have instead of paying two bills. Now, just they're more, you know, they'll be on the one. Where Spy Point, okay, like Spy Point cameras, you pay per camera, you have a subscription fee for that individual camera.
Right.
With Cuddy Link, you pay one membership for the mother camera, and you can network now up to 23 other cameras into that. So that's a
That's really awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I can tell you one thing. If you're wanting to poach on Sean's property and you walking around on his property and you've got to use the bathroom real bad, you better look real good because he's got cameras on every other tree out there. I promise you.
We might have a few out there. So it just but to answer that question from last week, that's what I was talking about on that. And they're so now there's just you can add more cameras. That makes it. There are other companies doing that networked camera
right.
thing. I think Muddy maybe is doing it, but for me, I've been using that Cuddy Link system 6 years now and just a big fan of it. But there might be others that are better. I can just tell you what Cuddy Link does, and that was the change.
Yeah.
So people were asking me about it. All right, coming right back, more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. We'll get the antenna raised on the phone for Jay Graddick, and we'll be right back. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you along with us. Remember, this show goes up in podcast form sometime later this morning. You can always check it out as it airs live. I usually say it airs live now and then has a replay tonight at 11 o'clock. But tonight, Auburn doesn't start, I mean, until 9:30. We're going to be in post-game. So the replay, the 11 o'clock replay is going to be in the middle of the Auburn game. So that's not happening. You'll be able to catch it tomorrow morning. And then tomorrow evening as well. But the podcast posts up later on today, so you want to share that. You can always grab it there from fmtalk1065.com, from the FM Talk 1065 app, or anywhere you subscribe for podcasts. Just make sure to subscribe to FM Talk 1065. All right, continue our conversation with Jay Graddick, Skinner's Wild Game Processing, a man that spent a lot of time killing a lot of big deer in Kansas. But, you know, Mike, you said the thing, and this is what we talk about. And Jay, you said times have changed, where it was pretty much a sure thing that you get drawn for a tag back in the old days. But, you know, I didn't get drawn last year. I didn't put in this year.
Right.
You didn't get drawn. Your grandson didn't get drawn. Jay, I mean, it's not a slam dunk anymore. And people need, also a lot of people from here who've always dreamed of going to Kansas don't think about deer hunting until this time of year when you needed to put
it's
in
too late.
Months ago, right?
Correct. You know, Mike, there was a family there at Vito Junction. It was four guys. It was a gentleman and his three sons. None of them got drawn. But man. I know a lot of people didn't get drawn this year.
And I wonder why, Jay.
I don't know. I really don't know. It's baffling because, I mean, they've been going out there for probably 15 years.
Yeah. And you've been going 20 years, and you've always gotten a tag.
Yeah, this will be my 20th season.
That's amazing, you know, and I can understand. Sometimes I think if you put in as a group, like if me and Dylan put in as a group, I could understand maybe one of us not getting, you know, we get drawn and we both in a group, so both of us can't go. But we did two separate draws and we both didn't get it. So,
right.
You know, like your buddy out there, him and his three sons, well, they probably put in as a group. So if one don't get drawn, I guess the other ones don't get drawn. Is that right?
I really don't know about the group thing, Mike. I just know he called me, and he said, hey, I didn't get drawn. And he said, loan me some money so I can buy 80 acres.
Yeah.
Yeah. I said, you're talking to the wrong guy about money.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. It's unfortunate. I mean, people, what happens is you go out there and you develop a relationship with landowners.
That's right.
And you have a place to hunt, okay? Well, back when this first started in Kansas, Mike, I think I told you before, the landowners, for every 80 acres, they could get a transferable non-resident deer tag. And then they would take, and you could reimburse them for it, and they'd sign it over to you. Okay, some of them put a little money on top of it, and that's how they made a few dollars. But they actually controlled, in a way, people that hunted on their land.
Yes. And they knew they were going to get a certain amount of income out of it every year.
Right. Right. Well, then it went to an outfitter sued the state of Kansas, is what I was told, a guy named Tomlin out of New Mexico, I think it worked from. And the state of Kansas, they didn't fight the lawsuit. They just said, okay, we're going to a draw system. So now the landowner don't know who he's going to get year to year because the people that he knows, like yourself, may not get drawn.
That's right. You know, I guess the good thing of that
is, I think if I was a landowner, I'd go back. I'd be lobbying the state to go back to transferable tags if I was a landowner.
That's right. You know, and like you say, I mean, you go out there and develop this relationship with these farmers and stuff, like I did, and finally get in a first-class place. And then, you know, now the farmer's not going to get the money that I would give him. And that's a good thing is that they don't charge you if you don't get drawn. You know, I didn't realize that. I said, oh, man, I'm getting ready to pay this big money. And I'm not even going to get to go out there. But, you know, come find out that, no, if you don't get drawn, you know, the farmer won't take your money, which is really good.
Real good.
Yeah, that's really good. I don't know that all farmers are that way. I'm sure some farmers say, no, you know, you're going to pay me no matter what. You get drawn, you don't get drawn. I mean, I'm looking for this income to come in every year. I count on it. You know, I'll get somebody else, you know. So,
So
anyway, that worked out good for me. I didn't have to pay that money.
Good thing. While
we're talking to Jay, let's look a little further west. And it's funny, this comes back to me because a buddy of mine said, only you, because I do another show, Jay, during the week, show called Midday Mobile. And we were a couple of weeks ago, right? So we're looking at, what was it, Tropical Storm Hurricane Hillary, right, coming into the southwest. And you saw the flood and stuff in California, but it threw a bunch of rain, Arizona, New Mexico, Utah area, from that. And I said, well, there's bad news for people out there, but it's probably good news for people that are looking for 2024 elk and mule deer tags and places like New Mexico and Arizona, because it's going to grow a lot of groceries and help those deer out there. But yeah, I've watched stuff like that too. I'm not trying to go west this year, but I am looking at 2024. Those kind of rains, you spend a lot of time out there. It's something that back here we don't think about, but just a kind of a wet couple months out west, and they can put on some antlers from that.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. What I used to look at is, if you got a wet spring during the antler growing time,
yep,
it seems like, you know, wherever it is you're hunting, the antlers on average for most of the deer bucks are bigger. And I'm the same with elk and everything else.
Yeah, it's just a weird thing. If y'all are, you know, thinking about this draw game and this thing I've been doing for the last 10 years or so, it may be worth, you know, you hear like hey, we got more snowpack up here than normal, or it's a rainy spring, or they got extra, you know, that when you start looking at what units and stuff you want to put in for, there's something to be said for that. I mean, you put an extra 30 inches on, you know, mule deer buck, you're talking, you know, some real trophy potential. So
absolutely. Jay,
I'll tell you a place for big mule deer in Utah.
Okay.
And I'll tell you off the air.
Okay,
off
good. Good. I need the unit, because I think I have 5 general rifle mule deer points. I think I got 5 or 6 for elk. There's a limited and a general rifle mule deer there. And also it has this weird, unless they've changed it, and my buddies from Utah didn't call me this year because I guess I have not gone in years past, but it's kind of a weird thing. I think we talked about it before, Jay, that Utah has, and I think when they went to some of their antler restrictions and making things lottery for elk hunting, they did this to make people happy or to deal with it. They got a spike bull elk season, and it's usually right there around Labor Day. I mean, just back at the end of, actually, I think last year it started a little early, like mid-August through Labor Day weekend. And you can't shoot big elk. You can shoot a spike elk buck. You can have like one, maybe, you know, brow tine or something like that. And that's the season. And my buddies made a good point. They said, you want to see if you're, you know, in mountain shape to be able to come when you draw for a bigger tag come out, because it's going to be the same mountain, same things we're hunting, but you can only shoot spikes. Have you heard of this, Jay?
No, I wouldn't be going on that hunt.
Well, I know, that's why. But their angle to me was, somebody's going to kill them anyways, and it's a good way to test out, you know, I mean, because they're hunting some pretty gnarly stuff. They said the same areas we'll be hunting, you know, for when they get drawn. But it was really weird to me that in their way.
That don't make a lot of sense.
I know, but they do this thing. And I wonder if it's just political, because people were so angry when they went to limited draw and all that they threw this out there to. It's archery, you know, archery only. But yes, fight, like, you can't, they can have like, I think, 1 brow tine.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be like opening up spike season here in Alabama.
Hey, settle down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't tell folks that. You got a nephew who'd like to hear that. He'd be listening right now.
But Jay, if we were going to go out to Kansas, this weekend or next weekend, we're getting ready to go hunting out there. What do we need to do to get ready? I know you. All you do is archery hunt. What do we need to do to get everything ready to go?
Well, I go through every year. I kind of go through a ritual, if you will. First of all, make sure your equipment is in top shape. Make sure your bow is tuned properly. It's going to make a huge difference on a pass-through and your penetration, regardless what kind of broadhead you shoot. Then you got that set up. Then practice with it. I put a tree stand on a tree in my backyard, and I sit in my stand, and I shoot from a sitting position, and just get used to shooting from a tree stand.
And that's critical, Jay. Shooting from a sitting position, that is very critical, because sometimes if a deer comes up, you don't have time to stand up, or you can't afford to do the motion to spook them. So that's very important, because it shoots a little different sitting down than it does standing up like you normally do.
Yep. I've had a couple of situations, Mike, where I was standing up and the deer came by me and there would be a limb in the way and I would have to sit down and crouch down as low as I could so I could shoot under the limb and kill the deer.
That's right. So you do need to practice both ways.
Exactly. Practice that. Look at your clothes you're going to wear out there. You want the most silent. I don't care what's on TV being advertised. You want the most silent clothes you can get. Big sweater over your shirts. I got a sweater I bought from you, Mike, back in the 1990s.
Whew.
And
I wear
it to this day. I wear it to this day. If that sweater could talk, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But you might be in jail.
I don't know about that, but it would have some tall tales, I tell you.
I'm kidding.
But, you know, these are just the little things, you know, and you want to make sure you got a backup release. And you want to get in good form, get healthy. I mean, I'm fixing to be 65, so I can't just go out there the week before go hunting and decide I'm going to shoot my bow and then go hunt. It don't work that way.
That's
right.
Not be consistent.
A month ago. Yep. And just get your game plan, mentally go out and execute some shots. And look, if there's any question, I'm going to give this advice to people, because it does not turn out good. When you have a shot at a deer, you draw your bow back. If there is any question in your mind that you might not kill that deer, don't shoot.
Yep. But
99% of the time, it's not going to turn out good.
There we go. I got to run to the break. Come back. We'll pick it up with Jay Graddick from Skinner's Wild Game Processing, talking about some Midwest big buck hunting and the to-dos before you go. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, our friend Jay Graddick from Skinner's Wild Game Processing. And what are we talking about?
We're talking about getting things ready to go hunting. You know, we're talking about out west, but it doesn't make any difference whether it's out west or it's right here in Mobile County. It doesn't matter. Getting prepared for bow season. So, Jay, go from there.
Yes, sir. Like I said, make sure you're 100% confident in the shot you're going to take. It's a live animal. It's not a paper target. There is a huge difference. We talked about, you know, the garments you'd wear. You want to be silent. I've been busted by moving just one time, just taking my hand out of my pocket. You want the most silent clothes you got. And then, Mike, another thing, you and I talked about it. I don't know why they like them, but these binocular cases you wear on your chest.
Yep, you call them suitcases.
How you gonna get? I call them a suitcase. Yeah. I don't know how you're going to get your binoculars out. Like, my binoculars got a rangefinder built into them. So if I'm going to range something, I got to use my binoculars to do it. How you're going to get them out of that case, do what you're going to do, and put them back, and then close the case the way that top opens up, and then be able to get your bow in your hands and do everything you need to do to kill the animal without making noise.
That's right.
I mean, I don't see how you can do it. You need to go and watch some of the professional hunters in Africa and look at how they carry their binoculars. And that's the simplest way in the world.
And how do they carry them, Jay? Yeah. How do they carry their binoculars?
How do they do it?
It'll go over one shoulder, like your left shoulder, and be on your right side. Okay? And then you just the strap is a little longer than you used to. But they just slide them up and look at them, and they go right back to your side, whether it be your left or your right side. And they're not in your chest. They're not hanging out. And that, to me, that's the best way to do it. I've been doing it for years.
You know, with that binocular case on your chest, it looks great.
Well, I mean, I use it rifle hunting, and now that's what I do out west. It's rifle hunting.
But if you have a deer come up on your, and you're right-handed, and comes up on your left side, and you got to shoot your bow across your chest, I mean, there's a lot of things that can go bad.
I wouldn't have one bow hunting at all. That's I would.
Yeah. But, I mean, you see them on TV all the time. Jay's right. You see them all the time on TV. They've got these cases on the chest. So I don't know if that's after they shoot the deer, they put the suitcase on their chest, their binoculars.
Maybe somebody – I mean, it's like a no-go for me because I shoot a longbow. Like, I can't have anything on my chest. But maybe somebody with a release and a – I still wouldn't want – I worry about buttons on the front of a shirt.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I worry about everything there.
Yeah, a button on your
sleeve.
Shirt.
Yeah.
Well, just your shirt pocket.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Button, So
I can understand a target archer, okay, and they're walking around all day and they're looking at their 3D silhouette or whatever. You know, I can understand that, I guess. But in a hunting situation, less is best.
That's right.
Less crap you got on your bow.
Yeah.
These shows where the buck's coming, they range the buck, and then they adjust their sights, the yardage, and all this stuff, and the deer's still walking. Guys, I'm not buying that whole scenario. It's great, so that sight, but that's too much activity. Less is best.
I agree with you.
The amount of things that can go wrong, better off you're going to be, and it'll cost you a deer one day.
And also on the range. And on the ranging thing, I mean, it might be different for spot and stalk and all that kind of stuff, but back here at home, I mean, you get in your tree stand, you should go ahead and do your ranging beforehand. That stump's 10 yards, that one's 15, you know, so you know just by looking, not have to get out a device. So, I mean, that's
right.
But I mean, yeah, if you're going to some unknown place and stalking on something, I guess that's different, but. I ain't done any of that on whitetail, so it's all news to me.
But everything's got to be quiet, even your safety belt. If you're not careful, that buckle that goes around your safety belt, that can cause a problem. All it's got to do is just click just a little bit, and your hunt's over with.
I put tape on mine on the outside. Just put electrical tape on it or some duct tape.
Yep.
And also, too, Mike, I know we're running out of time. When I was talking about practicing with that tree stand, wear your safety belt when you're practicing.
Absolutely.
Dealing with your lanyard.
No, you can't fall when you're practicing, Jay. You can't. What are you talking about?
I know that. sometimes when I practice, my tree stand isn't 2 feet off the ground.
Right.
When I'm shooting my bow, I'm not really shooting angles at that time, trying to adjust sights or pins on shooting on downward angles. I'm just working through the motions of all the things it takes to execute a shot from a tree stand with all your, you ain't got to put on your heavy jacket in the summertime, 100 degrees, but you, all those other things, your safety belt, your binoculars, whatever it is you've got, if the more you do that, you'll be ready to go hunting when you get out, wherever it is you're going, whether it's in Alabama, whether it's Midwest or wherever, you're going to be more confident, you're going to be more organized, and you're going to be able to execute that shot when the time comes.
You know, you said something, Jay, there that is important, and that is the jacket. You know, you're going to, like, to Kansas where it gets cold up there and you got a big jacket on. I mean, there's two things there. When it gets real cold, sometimes it's harder to pull your bow back. You've been practicing all summer long. Everything's fine. You pull it back, no problem. And you get this real cold weather come through that's, 15 degrees or whatever, and you can't pull your bow back. And then you got this jacket on, and then you're shooting across your chest with a big old jacket on it on you. Your strain can hit your chest. So, I mean, there's a couple of things there with wearing a jacket that can cause a problem.
Well, sitting down, you stand up and shoot 70 pounds all day long.
Yes.
But when you sit down and you draw 70 pounds from the side or straight on, it's a different ball game. If you got that temperature, you go from 80 degrees to 30-something degrees. It's game on, baby. You might be grunting.
That's for sure. Hey, we're going to have to wrap it up for this week. Jay, we'll have you come back with us soon, and we'll start talking about bow season here in Alabama even more. Thanks for being on.
Thank you, Jay.
All right, thank you, guys. Y'all have a good day.
Will do. There he goes, Jay Graddick from Skinner's Wild Game Processing, and we're out, but we'll do it again next week. Hopefully by then, a dove report, some teal for the mix.
And I'll tell you what I see in Kansas.
All right, good deal. All right, we'll do it again next week. Y'all have a great one.